It's great to see everyone. First of all, thank you, Simone, for that warm introduction. I appreciate it very much. And Josh and Simone for opening your beautiful home. Not only tonight, but this home, many of you have probably been here before. If not, you will be here. This home is regularly open, as are your hearts, in the warmest way. And you have transformed and continue to build our community. For that, we are tremendously indebted to you. So a big, big thank you for tonight and for all that you do. Before we begin, I just want to mention, and it's actually even more poignant with the picture that is conveniently here on this table, but over 360 rockets have rained down in Israel over the last 24 hours. What did Israel do? What were they guilty of? That their civilians would be the target of rockets? An 8-year-old girl in critical condition running for her life? An old age home that had a direct hit from a rocket today? And so many millions of people literally under the threat of 15 seconds when a siren is sounded. What did they do wrong? They're Jews, living in the Jewish homeland. Guilty only of having eliminated a terrorist, architect, and mastermind who was responsible for past crimes and murders and was planning more. And the fact that the Jewish state is being targeted, 360 rockets, and we can't even imagine if one rocket were launched our way, what the response would be, what the fear we would live with is. And so our brothers and sisters in Israel are very much on our minds. When I say that, I mean collectively, all Israelis, Jew and non-Jew alike. Because, I mean, that's the irony of it. It's not only Jews, it's Druze, it's Arab citizens of Israel who are vulnerable to these rockets. So they're all in our thoughts and in our prayers. We have them very much in mind tonight. And the Brody's own Avigail, I'm sure you know, for those who don't, she actually is in the Israeli army, and she operates an Iron Dome battery in Sderot in the south of Israel. We hope that her training would all be in theory. Unfortunately, for the last 24 hours, it's very much in practice. Brody's not yet emotional. So we all have Avigail very much in mind tonight, and I hope our learning and our studying and our gathering in order to grow and improve ourselves should be in her merit and the merit of all of her colleagues and friends who are putting themselves on the front lines to protect our people. So our topic tonight is November. And November means one thing, people think right away. Topic of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's coming. For some people, Thanksgiving, you hear that word and you're excited and you look forward. For some people, it means family and friends. For others, it means football and fun. For some people, it means the stuffed turkey and what goes with turkey? We have cranberry sauce and all that other stuff. Some people have wonderful memories and excited about Thanksgiving, and other people recoil at the thought of having to spend another Thanksgiving. And our topic for tonight is really not about Thanksgiving, the holiday, though it's an important one, a beautiful one, and we should tap into it and appreciate its beauty. But our topic tonight is that from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, from our tradition and its timeless teaching, every single day is Thanksgiving. And I know that's cliched. Someone somewhere will give that talk or sermon or write that article every year in November that it's not one day. Mother's Day is every day, and Father's Day is every day, and Thanksgiving is every day. And it's good that we have a dedicated day because there's some people who only do it one day a year. If you wouldn't even have that day, they wouldn't do it at all. But what I want to share with you is that the secret to your happiness, to your meaning, to your purpose in life, the magic formula to your relationships, to your family, friends, is harnessing and cultivating within ourselves that feeling of giving thanks, an appreciation, a profound and deep appreciation for the blessings in our lives. Thanksgiving itself, the holiday, is actually a debate exactly when it began. It was the President Lincoln. Sorry, I haven't had much sleep recently. It was not President Clinton. No editorial comment for or against, it just wasn't him historically. I don't know how Gore invented the internet, but President Lincoln in 1863, or was it Washington in 1789, or some say it was the Pilgrims themselves in 1622, and the answer, of course, is none of the above. They didn't invent Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was invented at the beginning of time. When we had what to appreciate, we needed to express it. We needed to say it. Why do we say thank you? Why is it so important to be grateful? Is it for the recipient, the beneficiary of the thanks? When you say thank you to someone, are you doing it for them? So I want to share with you an insight. The Torah, the Bible, tells us the story. Many of you are familiar. When we were enslaved in Egypt, 210 years of suffering and servitude. We were oppressed and persecuted, unfortunately defined so much of our history, and certainly it informs so many of our holidays. When we came out through the 10 plagues. Many, most all of us observe a form of Passover, the Passover Seder, and there we recount, and to a degree we relive, the 10 plagues with which we left Egypt. Who was the one who carried out those plagues? Who was our great teacher? In fact, that became his last name. Moshe, Moses, Rabbeinu, our teacher. It wasn't actually his last name. It didn't appear on his driver's license. His mother didn't call him to the table by that name. Moshe Rabbeinu, come for supper, you're late for dinner. His name was Moshe, but we call him our teacher. He's the greatest Jew that ever lived or that ever will live. And why that is, we could talk about another time. But what's interesting is that while Moshe was the catalyst, he was the leader who invoked most of the plagues, there were a few that he didn't. Notably, the first. Who remembers what the first plague was?
Dumb,
blood. First plague was that all the water changed over into blood, not only the Nile, but really any water. Any water that had been collected, any water that was running, turned into blood. And how did the water turn into blood? The staff touched the water. And who did that? Who was the one who provoked, who got that first plague started?
Aaron.
It was Aaron. And why was it Aaron and not Moses? If Moses is the greatest Jew, and true Moses was younger than Aaron, but he is the quintessential paradigmatic leader of our people. He's the greatest leader of all time. So why was he the one not to do it? Why sideline him? Why was he overshadowed in that moment by Aaron? So our Talmud, our sages tell us, you know why? Moshe and Moses had a debt of gratitude to the Nile. Why would he have been indebted to the Nile? What did the Nile do for him?
Saved his life.
When the edict came out that all the firstborn males had to be slaughtered, had to be killed, we know that a basket was woven by Moses' mother. He was placed in it. He floated in the Nile till he was discovered by the leader of Egypt's daughter, and his life was saved. And how was his life saved? The Nile was that cocoon, that protection, that preserved and saved his life. And so our rabbis say, you know how inappropriate it would be? What an ungrateful act to smite, which is biblical word that no one ever uses other than in this context. It would have been a total act of ingratitude to hit the Nile, to touch the Nile, to hurt the Nile, to injure the Nile. So you look at me and you say, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. The Nile is an inanimate object. The Nile has no feelings. And yet, Moshe was instructed, you need to be grateful even to something inanimate. And what do you learn from here? I'll tell you what I learned. What always struck me is that what this teaches us is that gratitude, saying thank you, is not for the recipient. Because otherwise you'd never thank an inanimate object. You'd never thank the Nile. You'd never thank something that doesn't have feelings. It's not a person. It's not animated or alive. Why do you thank a Nile? Because you're not thanking the Nile. You're thanking because you yourself need to thank. Moshe needed to express that gratitude. Moses needed to be grateful. And it would have been a lack of gratitude to hit the Nile. I'll tell you when this struck me. I spoke about it a few years ago in our synagogue, and I believe that they actually even changed it since then. But someone got us a gift of the Alexa. What is that? Echo? What's the thing called?
It's
great. They're a lot of fun. They're also spying on you and listening to everything you say. And now they're coming out with one with a camera that's going to be watching everything you do. So be very, 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 very careful. You may have seen the story. Last year, there was a couple who were gossiping and speaking about someone they knew. And their Echo recorded it, and they thought by something they said that they told the Echo to email the recording. And it sent the recording to the subject that they were speaking about and that they were gossiping about. They sued because of it. So you have to be careful if you have that. Anyway, so you have to be careful. Unplug it, turn it off, put it outside, put it under the towels in the pantry. Whatever you got to do if you want some privacy. You don't want it around if you want privacy. Why am I bringing it up? Because I'll tell you what happened. Someone got it for us as a gift, and my kids were all over it. My kids loved the thing. And how do you talk to it? What do you say? Alexa, turn on the light. Alexa, play my favorite song. Alexa, what did the Yankees do last night? Alexa, what's the weather outside? And I listened over the first few days that we had this device, and all I could hear... That's really funny.
Oh, sorry.
What's it doing? What did it give us? The weather or the Yankees score? Did it give us the weather? It's okay. All right, we're good. We unplugged it. It's also a story that happened last year. Good Morning America was doing a segment about the Alexa, and the person demonstrating on any home that was watching Good Morning America and had an Alexa plugged in, also the exact same thing that just happened. What bothered me about this device once we had it? You know what bothered me tremendously? I heard my children, who I've been raising to say please and thank you, barking orders at Alexa. And you know what happens when you bark orders at Alexa? You get confused. You say, Alexa, what's the weather? Mom, serve me dinner. Dad, drive me to the thing. And you forget to say please or thank you, have manners or courtesy, because Alexa's cultivating within us a sense of entitlement, of demanding, of getting what we want, of having our needs met, as if we deserve it, we're entitled to it, and we don't need to be appreciative for it. So there's some unintended consequences of the beautiful technology that we have. I didn't give it back, and we didn't smash it with a hammer. We still have it, but I told my children that the condition to keeping it is they say please and thank you to Alexa. And I was a little bit ahead of my time, because a few months after I gave the sermon, they reprogrammed Alexa that it now responds to orders, from what I understand, of please and thank you, that it can be programmed to require you to be kind and courteous. Because you know what happens when you bark orders at Alexa? Well, Alexa is supposed to do what you tell it to do. So why do I have to say please? And why did I have to say thank you? You know what the danger is? You go to the restaurant, and the server serves you, and you don't say thank you. You're so engrossed in your conversation, or more likely still looking down at your device, or stuffing your face with that food, and you say, what do I have to thank them? That was their job. Why do I have to thank the housekeeper for doing the laundry? That was her job. Why do I have to thank my father or mother for working hard to bring home an income to pay for me? That's their job. And when you mistakenly conclude that's everyone's job around you, you become negligent. And you stop saying thank you. And who suffers the most when you don't say thank you? It's not the recipient who fails to hear it. Why do we as parents, those, please God, who want to be parents should merit to have that blessing in their life. Why do we as parents demand of our children to say thank you? Because we're so high and mighty, sitting on our pedestal and arrogant, that we need to hear thank you? No, I don't need to hear thank you. I need to know that you say thank you. You need to feel grateful. You need to feel thanks. And the question is why? Why do you need to feel thanks? Why do you need to feel grateful? What's wrong with living life and let other people serve you and do for you? And why? If it's not the beneficiary, which we've just proven, because Moses was instructed, don't hit that Nile. Why? Why do I have to be grateful to a Nile? It's an inanimate object. It's not a person. Because you need to learn to say thank you. Why do I need to learn to say thank you if it's not for somebody who deserves or needs or even hears or feels the thank you? Alexa doesn't have feelings. The Nile doesn't have feelings. And yet, it's so critically important we say thank you, and the question is why. So I want to share with you a magnificent insight by a great rabbi. He lived in New York. He actually, before the war, was in Eastern Europe. And then he lived in New York, and he ultimately moved to Israel and died there. His name was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, and he had a yeshiva called Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn, New York. And he said the following. Does anyone know how to say thank you in Hebrew?
Todah.
Todah. Good. Todah. Or the root of the word todah, hoda'ah, or to be modeh. To be modeh. The word modeh means thank you. Does anyone know, if I want to say to you, if you say to me, hey Goldberg, you borrowed $100, you never paid me back, you owe me $100, where's my money? And I want to say to you, you're right, I admit that I owe you the money. How do I say I admit?
Modeh.
Modeh. So what we've concluded is the exact same word is used, the same Hebrew word means both thank you and I admit. Did we run out of words? Did we run out of creativity? We ran out of combinations of the alphabet? What happened that we couldn't come up with another word for admit or thank you? Why are they the same word? Or if Futner puts it differently, if you understand Hebrew, you'll appreciate this. You could be what's called modeh le and modeh al. Modeh al means I'm grateful for. Modeh le means I admit to you. Why is it the same word? And listen to this brilliant, brilliant insight which will change the way that you think about gratitude and about Thanksgiving. The holiday and the feeling. It says the reason thank you means the same thing as to admit is because you know what's implicit in every gesture, in every expression of thanks, is the admission, I needed you. In every thanks is the admission, you improved my life, you did something for me, you made me more complete, more whole, I benefited from you, I depend and rely on you. Now you understand why arrogant people have such a hard time saying thank you. Because the more arrogant you are, the more independent you want to feel. I don't need anyone, I don't need anything, I don't need favors, I don't need help. I don't have to admit that I need, I don't have to admit that you benefited or helped. I don't have to admit that I owe you a debt. What do we call it? A debt of gratitude. You admit, and you're challenged about a debt. And why do you have to admit that debt of gratitude? Not for the recipient. Alexa doesn't need to hear, thank you. You want to know a great nachas moment? You know what the nachas, Jewish pride. So my son, when he was 5 years old, I overheard him say, Alexa, are you friends with Siri? I was like, that's a Yiddish cup. That's good thinking. Does that not make complete sense that Alexa and Siri would be friends? From a 5-year-old's perspective, I loved it. That was the moment of great news. So why do I have to say thank you, Alexa? Alexa tells me the score or the weather, or turns on the light, and I say thank you, Alexa. It's ridiculous. Alexa doesn't have feelings, not purpose. It's absurd. Why do I have to say thank you? I have to thank the Nile, and I have to thank Alexa, and the answer is yes. Because each thank you is an exercise in that admission that I don't live or operate in this world on my own. I can't do it by myself. I need the people around me. And I need most of all the Almighty, the Creator of the universe, who is so generous and kind and magnanimous and good and gracious, that who am I and where am I without Him? And a failure to say thank you only breeds arrogance. And a habit of saying thank you leads to an attitude of humility. The attitude of gratitude centers you. And it doesn't matter whether it's Alexa or the Nile. It's the experience of saying thank you. It's going through that motion and that exercise of making that admission. It is arrogant people can't say thank you. They can't acknowledge you did something for them, and it drives us all crazy. Again, not because we need the gratitude, but we see it as such a defect and deficiency in them. What's the matter with you? I drove you, I made you a meal, I gave you an idea for yourself, whatever I get, what's the matter with you? Why can't you say thank you? Not because I need to hear it, but it's so disturbing the corruption that I'm seeing in you. And that's something that we never ever want to see in ourselves, and certainly never see in our children. And that's why we begin every single day, every single morning, the first words on our lips are, Mode ani, grateful am I, very not smooth sentence. Grateful am I? Who wrote that? What should it say? I am grateful. I wake up every morning and I should say, Ani Modeh. Why don't I start out the day and say, Ani Modeh? Why do I instead begin with this really clumsy sentence, Modeh Ani? Why?
Say about yourself.
Because if I begin my day, if the first word that leaves my lips when I woke up is, I, me, my interests, my needs, my ego, my desires, me, 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 me. The emphasis and the attitude of me is the biggest obstacle to meaningful relationships, to happiness, to serenity, to health, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual. And so we can't wake up in the morning and the first word we say be, I. Oh yeah, I'm grateful to you. I wake up in the morning, the king, the queen, I am ready to begin my day. You should serve me. I am entitled. Instead, we wake up every morning and we say, Modeh Ani. Several years ago, I'll date myself and tell you how many years ago, because in this story, I came out of the synagogue in the morning and someone in the parking lot handed me a CD. It was the round thing with a hole in the middle. It looked like a donut. So they gave me a CD. It was of Tony Robbins. And they said, Rabbi, you really should listen to this. It's fantastic. So, okay, I thought, interesting. They feel I need to be motivated. Good. I'm always looking for greater motivation. I got in my car and I popped it into the CD player. That's the little slot that put the donut in. Fine. So you can't even get a car or a CD player anymore. So I popped in the CD player. Tony Robbins, who's great, don't get me wrong. He's great. I subscribe to his podcast. He's a great motivational speaker. I think he was just down here and did a whole seminar. He probably had people walking on fire and glass and all that kind of stuff. So Tony Robbins begins his CD and he says, in classic Tony Robbins, like veins popping, sweat flowing, like you're exhausted just listening to him. Tony Robbins says, if you want a successful day, you want to go to sleep tonight having killed it in business and relationships and lifestyle and fitness, you want a successful day, here's what you need to do, he says. I'm going to give you the secret. Follow this prescription, you guarantee a successful day. You know what you need to do? You need to wake up every morning with an attitude of gratitude. And here's what he says. First thing when you wake up in the morning, take out a pen and paper, grab your phone, and make a list of things you're grateful for. And if you wake up every morning and you start your day with an attitude of gratitude, you guarantee a successful day. You know what I did? I pressed stop. I listened to Tony Robbins. I like him. But he wasn't telling me anything I didn't know. Because you know when I learned that? I was able to speak. When I was first able to sleep, even before I was able to speak, my parents, when I woke up in the morning, before they changed my diaper, they sang with me, Modeh Ani. A Jewish baby, the first thing they learn, almost out of the womb, is to not only begin the day, but begin a life with Modeh Ani. I am so grateful. Now let me ask you, what are you so grateful for? Maybe you had a terrible night's sleep. Maybe your kid threw up on you or wet the bed. Maybe you wet your own bed. Or you woke up to ensure you wouldn't 17 times to go to the bed. Whatever the case is, what are you so grateful for? Maybe you have nothing to be so grateful for. Maybe you turn over and you see who's next to you and you say, I'm not so grateful at all. What are you so grateful for? You woke up in the morning, and what are you so grateful for? Starting out with that great idea. You know what the answer is? You woke up in the morning. Let's stop there. Because for every person who woke up this morning, today, Wednesday, there are many who didn't. I've done more than a handful of funerals of people who didn't wake up. If you woke up, you're ahead of the game. If you woke up, you're already in the win column. Now, what kind of day you're going to have? How will you respond? What will you do? What will your day be filled with? What attitude will you bring? That all is yet to unfold. But if you woke up, you didn't just wake up, by the way. You woke up and both your eyes worked. You woke up and when you turned and got out of the bed, both your legs were working. A few years ago, I tore my Achilles playing basketball. And I had to have surgery. It was 6 months of rehab. And I was on a knee scooter that I have no patience to go slowly, so I fell off all the time. And you could ask, because my dear friends at the synagogue made a collage of the videos from the security cameras of me falling off the knee scooter. Because friends like that, what do you need enemies for? But I have to tell you, for 6 months, do you know what it was to shower? For 6 months, do you know what it was to make it from here to the other side of the room with a cup of coffee? To get to the car? Do you know what it was? And you know, boy, when that cast came off, and when I finished my rehab, I was grateful to wake up in the morning and put my feet to the ground, be able to walk, and be able to run, and be able to jump, and be able to go, and to be able to accelerate, and be able to move. Tragically, it usually takes losing something in order to appreciate it that we ever had to begin with. So if you ever had the flu or the stomach virus, or God forbid, you get a problem with your eye, whatever the case may be, it takes losing something. Why should it have to take losing it to be grateful for having had it? Wake up with the attitude of gratitude. If you woke up in the morning, you're ahead of the game. Modeh Ani. Modeh Ani. And in fact, I'll just tell you, I share this thought all the time because it's one of my favorites. The words of Modeh Ani. The words of Modeh Ani. Modeh Ani. Not Ani Modeh, not I'm grateful, but Modeh Ani, or women should say Modeh Ani, proper grammatically. Modeh and Modeh. Grateful am I. Modeh Ani lefanecha melechai v'kayam. Before you, the king. But you're not just the king that I kind of know that there's a first cause, or I know there's something bigger than myself, so I know there's a higher power. You're not just the melech, you're not just the king, you're chai v'kayam. You're alive and well. You're in my life. I have a relationship with you. I talk to you and I hear you talking to me all the time. When the light turns green when I needed it, when I made that flight, when that thing worked out, when I look out at my family or my life or my income or my health, you're talking to me all the time. You're not just a melech, you're not just a king in the abstract, you're chai v'kayam. You're alive and well and involved and engaged and ever-present in my life. And why am I grateful to you, Shehazar, to be in the Shema City? Because you returned my soul to me. Our tradition is that when a person sleeps, their soul is as if extracted from their body and elevates upstairs, and it has to come back down, it has to be restored. It doesn't always go so well. There are people who have tragic episodes in their sleep. They don't wake up the healthy way they went to sleep, if they wake up at all. You returned it to me, how bechemla, with kindness. And then the last two words of Modeh Ani. Rabbah, great, emunasecha. What does the word emuna mean? Anyone?
Faith.
Emuna secha means your faith. Great is your faith. And I ask you, who are we talking to? Grateful am I to the King who's part of my life, that he restored my soul, and that I woke up today, because your faith is great. Your faith, isn't that not the way faith works? Doesn't faith go the other way? Don't we have faith in God? Since when does God have faith in us? Every morning we wake up and we affirm, we acknowledge, you know, God, I know you believe in me, even when I stop believing in myself. I know you think I have more to achieve. My best is yet to come. I have a mission to accomplish. I have more to do. And how can I be so confident, God, that you believe in me? You know why? Because I woke up this morning. You renewed my contract for another day. And that in itself, God, is an expression that you believe in me, Rabbi Emunah Secha. Your faith in me is great. And so, gratitude is not for the recipient. It's for us to express the gratitude as an exercise in humility, to remember that we're dependent on one another and on Him, to feel a sense of being humble. And therefore, we have to say it, even if the recipient is inanimate, like the Nile or an Alexa. When we say it, we become more humble. And therefore, it's the way we begin our day. Not only is it the way that we begin our day, what are our people called? Jews. How do you say that in Hebrew? Yehudim. At the root of the word Yehudi is Modeh. The Chidush Arim, one of the great Gera Rebbes, one of the Rebbes of Europe, the Hasidic rabbis of Europe before the war, he said, we are called Yehudim because we are a people of gratitude. That should be the definition of who we are. It's a terrible violation and desecration of why we're here. If people say, Jews, they're terribly ungrateful. They take things for granted. They're entitled. It should be the opposite. When I see a kippah, when I see a Torah observant or Torah concerned person, they're always overflowing with gratitude. They say thank you more than anyone else. They know how to show appreciation. They know how to be humble and recognize what I did for them. That's our mission. It's our purpose. It's why we're here. We wake up with that attitude of gratitude to remember that we depend and rely on one another, that we can't do it all alone. And it's the definition not only of how we start our day, each of us separately, it's part of the very definition of who we are as a people. It's something I have to do for myself. I can't ask someone to do for me. In the prayers, those familiar with the prayers, we say the Shemoneh Esrei, the Amidah, that's the centerpiece of all prayer. All the rest of prayer is really just meditation, reflection, study, to get ready for the big moment. And that big moment is called the Amidah. The word Amidah means to stand. And why is it called to stand? Because you're standing before whom? Before God. It's really a very beautiful image. You take three steps back and you take three steps forward. And when you take those three steps forward, you're not standing in the same place that you were a moment ago. You were transported before the heavenly throne. And you can be in the living room. You could be at the synagogue. You could be on the side of the road. You could be at the airport. You could be in the gas station. You could be at work. You could be in the gym. It doesn't matter where you are in this world. When you take those three steps forward, with intentionality, with mindfulness, and you're present, and you close your eyes and you talk to Him, He is listening. You always have an opportunity to get in, to be able to see Him, to talk to Him. It's an incredible gift. It's an amazing, amazing invitation we have. So we say the Amidah, which was written by the men of the Great Assembly 2,000 years ago, and they were able to capture the universal needs of all humanity. So we begin it, and this is for another time, but Rabbi Birdie specializes in explaining the prayers. We got three blessings of praise. And why are we praising God? We're about to follow it up with 13 asks, 13 requests. And then we're going to close it with three thank yous. Why do we begin with three things of praise? Is it like, I need something for my wife, so I say, did I mention how pretty you are today? Have I told you how amazing, smart, and charismatic you are? Right? So we're not praising God because we're positioning Him to answer favorably what we want. We're not buttering Him up. Why are we praising God? Because if I'm about to talk to God, I have to know who I'm talking to. So the praise is not because He needs it. Believe me, God is not impressed with your praise of Him. God doesn't need that. He's not blown away by that. I'll name drop. A few years ago, Larry David, the writer of Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, so his parents lived in Boca, and his mom passed away, and I did his mom's funeral. And I spent a long time preparing for the funeral and engaged in talking to him. And we got engrossed in a cold conversation about Judaism, and it was really fascinating, really fascinating. I proposed to him that maybe we should continue it as a way of honoring his mother's memory. He wasn't prepared to say Kaddish, and he said to me, Rabbi, that That sounds like a commitment. I'm not good with commitments. It didn't get anywhere. He's in real life exactly as he is on TV and how you picture him. But he's a brilliant, thoughtful person, and I was shocked that such a brilliant, creative mind would have the following problem. He said, "Rabbi, I don't pray because is God so arrogant that he needs to hear me praise him all day long? Like, what's the deal with God's ego that all day he needs all humanity across the globe to constantly be telling him how great he is?" And you know what I said to him? I said, "No offense, Mr. David, Larry, but your praising God is more of an insult to him than a praise. Like, who are you to praise him? If Phil Mickelson says to Tiger Woods, 'You are an amazing golfer. That was an outstanding bunker shot. Your drive was right down, it was beautiful. Something to watch.' Is Tiger Woods complimented? Yes. But if a 3-year-old says, 'Mr. Woods, you're such a good golfer,' does he say, 'Wow, he goes home and tells whoever he tells that, wow, I got such a great compliment today. I need to hear it again tomorrow and the day after and the day after.' The great one tolerates the praise of the lesser one." I said to him, "You think God needs to hear your praise? He's tolerating it. He doesn't need to hear it. We don't praise God to begin the Amidah because he needs to hear it. We praise because we need to know who he is and who we are vis-a-vis him, how categorically different we are, so that we understand, why am I about to ask him for these 13 things? Who is he that I'm going to ask him? The answer is, he's the creator of the universe, the omnipotent, infinite one. He's capable of all. He can provide. He's all the answers. He's involved and invested and aware of everything in my life. And okay, now that I've reminded myself of all that, it makes sense to turn to him and ask him for the following 13 things which are universal that we ask for. And Rabbi Broder can tell you more about it another time. What are the 13 universal needs everyone has that the rabbi said, these are the 13 things? 3 times a day, we come back and remind ourselves we need from God. Why do we do it 3 times a day? Once a day is not enough, once a week, once a month. Why do we do it 3 times a day? You know why? Because in between each time we pray, we forget who is the answer. We forget where it all comes from. So we have to keep recalibrating our compass. We have to keep coming back to that anchor of remembering that I'm going out. Now they say, you should work and act like it all depends on you, but pray like it all depends on God. That's the balance. That's our mission in life. Act, take initiative, be proactive, do as if it all depends on us, but pray like it all depends on him. So in between, we go to work, we kill it in business, kill it at the gym, we made an amazing dinner, we gave a great speech, we did an amazing transaction, and we think, you know, thanks God, but I'm good, I don't need you, I got it covered. So we have to remember, no, we do need him. 13 asks. And we end with 13, with 3 thank yous. So anyone know what's the prayer that we say that's a thank you at the end? We bow, we say, modim, thank you. It's the only part of the prayer that when the leader, the chazan, the cantor, repeats the Amida, we just listen passively when he repeats, except for this paragraph. He has his version, and we break into our version. And the Avud Raham, one of the great medieval rabbis, asks, what's the deal? The rest of the time, we're good as spectators. We're an audience. We're watching the chazan, the leader, repeat the Amida. Why do we have to kick in when it comes to this paragraph? And he says such an important insight. He says, you know why? Because you can't outsource gratitude. Yeah, he can represent. He can be my advocate. He can be my lawyer and say, hey, God, everyone behind me, the whole room, they all need good health, and they need wisdom, and they need justice, and they need livelihood, and they need... You can represent me on all that. But when it comes time to say thank you, the only way that you know it's sincere is if it comes directly from the person. There's no agency. We don't do thank you through someone else. Nobody can represent us. You can't outsource thank you. You have to say it. Like, you can't get someone else to say happy birthday, happy anniversary, happy Mother's Day, happy Father's Day to the special people in your life. If you're not the one doing it, it doesn't work. Tell your secretary, listen to me a favor, when you're tying later today, on the list of things I need you to do is to call my wife and say happy anniversary. You love her. Would you call my parents and say thank you for the thing that came in the mail? It doesn't work. You can't access gratitude. For it to be genuine, for it to be authentic, for it to be real, it has to come directly from us. How are we doing on time? We have a few more minutes. We have, when that name Yehudim, that we're called Jews, which means that we are a people of gratitude. We need to promote gratitude among our children. We need to teach them to say thank you. We learn this from one of the 12 tribes, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, whose name was Yehuda, which both, by the way, admission and gratitude, he did both. He made a big admission to Tamar. That's an episode they skipped in Hebrew school, but we'll fill it in. And he also knew and cultivated within us the ability to say thank you. Who named him Yehuda? This one's a tough one. Who was Yehuda's mother? Leah. And why did she name him Yehuda? She said, Hapam, this time, she had already had children, but this time, Hapam, Odeh es Hashem, I am so grateful to you, God. And the rabbis make a startling comment. They say, Leah was the first person in human history to say thank you. And it's very hard to understand, because all you have to do is study the Torah. If you open up the Chumash, if you open up the Bible, you find countless characters that came before her, going all the way back to Adam and Eve, who built an altar and said thank you to God, to Noah, who survived the flood with his family and said thank you to God, and many, many others that came before, Abraham and Sarah, and Isaac and Rebekah, and Jacob and Rachel, and Leah is the first one to say thank you. What do they mean? What do they mean? They say Leah's thank you was different than any other thank you. I'll tell you why her thank you was different. This is an insight by Rav Yerucham Lvovitz. He says the following. Some people use thank you as a transaction, as a quid pro quo. You did something for me, and that gives me a debt. So now how do I pay the debt? With the words thank you. And what happens after I say the words thank you? Now, we're even. Even Stephen. We're done. We're good. You had me for dinner, I had you for dinner. You got me this gift. Right? Everybody's living with these spreadsheets in their life. We gave my kids at their wedding, man, I'm not giving you a penny more. Yeah. You sat me at this place, I'm going to see what we have. You have me and you serve chicken, I'm not serving you meat. Everybody's got everything in their mind of exactly, which is it's a whole other talk, if you'll have me back, about how the only one you're punishing, if you live life that way, the only one you're punishing is yourself. That's the only one you're punishing is yourself. But everybody's got exactly that formula worked out, and that spreadsheet, and they're walking around with their head absolutely clogged with all those calculations and all those considerations. So what do we think? Is that you had me over and I have you back, and now good. You did something for me and I said thank you, and now good. What do we call thank you? Gratitude? We call it paying my debt with gratitude. You did something for me that created a debt. I'm indebted to you. How do I relieve myself of that debt to you? By saying thank you. Leah did something totally different. You know what Leah did? She named her son thank you. So you know what happened? Every single time she used his name, she was reminded and she again expressed, God, thank you. Thank you. I'll tell you something which you may not look at me kindly for, but I'll make this admission anyway. So I have 6 girls and a little boy. In that order. 6 girls, and then we had a little boy. That's why I look so old. Aged and so on. 6 girls and a little boy. When we had our little boy after 6 girls, to this day, he's now 7 years old, I can't believe he's here. And I have on my phone, almost every night when he's sleeping, I go in and stare at him and take a picture. It's going to be the longest bar mitzvah montage of the day. 13 years of nightly pictures. So, every night I look at him, every interaction I have with him, my daughter is also the greatest thing ever happened to me, I would be nowhere without them, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But my son, I just can't believe he's here. I can't believe he's here. I'm the richest man literally on the planet Earth. These 6 girls, my oldest is married, and actually last month gave me a grandson. And I go, I take a picture of him every night because I can't believe he's here. And that's what Leah did. I didn't go so far as, his name is Shai, his name isn't thank you. Shai is a gift, so I guess in some ways his name is Shai, yeah. His middle name is Natan, Nasan, Shai Natan. God, a gift you gave us. You gave us this gift. Every night I look at him and I say, thank you. I still can't believe he's here. I pinch myself. I don't know when he's 40 and I'm whatever. He's 80 and I'll be 105. Will I still be doing it? But Leah named him Yehuda. She literally, his name translates to thank you. So when she said, Yehuda, it's time for homework, what she was saying is, thank you, God, for giving me this kid. It's time for homework. She said, Yehuda, it's time for dinner. What she was saying, thank you, God, I still can't believe I have this kid. It's time for dinner. She is the first one to say thank you means she's the first one to see thank you as not discharging an obligation, as not unloading a debt, as not paying something off so that we're even, but it's a mentality, it's an attitude of gratitude. I could never be done saying thank you. My life has been transformed and changed and enriched so meaningfully that saying thank you once just is not adequate. It doesn't do enough. She named him thank you. She was the first to say thank you because it means she was the first to realize that she was never done being grateful. That thank you is not a commodity. You don't trade it. You don't give it to pay off a debt or to make yourself even. But it's a feeling that we have. And it's the feeling that we have that changes our life. A few more quick thoughts before I go around to teach another class. So, and by the way, all the research shows this. All the research on gratitude in kids is emerging, and it finds that parents' instincts to elevate the topics are critically important. If you want your child to be humble, you want your child to be grounded, you want your child to realize that they're dependent on others and have positive relationships, then they have to learn to say thank you. Even to Alexa. Even to Alexa. It was a study of 221 children in the Journal of School Psychology. It analyzed 6th and 7th graders. It assigned to list 5 things they were grateful for every day for 2 weeks. Every day for 2 weeks, they wake up and list 5 things they're grateful for. And you can't just get the same thing. Right? I'm alive, and I have a roof over my head and food to eat. It's got to be like, I'm grateful that today, X happened. I made the team. Today, I did well on my test. Today, we had my favorite dinner. Today, it's got to be real things. And it found they had a better outlook on school and a greater life satisfaction 3 weeks later compared to children assigned to list 5 hassles in their life. Mm-hmm. So the children were every day, said, what were 5 things today that were annoying? If you have 5 siblings, it's easy to fill that out. But what were the 5 things today that were 5 things today that were annoying? So virtues are not taught. They're lived. They're lived. You know what the best thing you can do is? At the dinner table, if you can't do it every night, as often as you can, is to go around and say, not what grades did you make today, what deal did you cut today, how much money did you make today, but what are you grateful for? What are you grateful for? Where's your modeh ani? Not ani modeh, not I am grateful, but grateful am I. What is your grateful am I? Do you know how easy this is to do today? Because there are countless apps on your phone. Add gratitude journals, gratitude apps. They have alarms and buzzers and beepers, and you can track and you can create a streak and you can share or you can, you know, recruit others to hold you accountable and everything that you want to be able to do and not want to be able to do. But to make sure that every day you take a moment to pause and reflect and say, with humility, there are people, there are things, there's the one above, without whom I'd be nothing, without whom I wouldn't have or enjoy what I did today. And I want to say thank you. I want to feel that attitude of gratitude because it literally, literally changes our lives. Another professor, University of California, did a study. He and his colleagues divided participants into 3 groups. Each one made weekly entries in a journal. The first wrote 5 things they were grateful for. The second, a list of 5 daily irritations. The third, 5 events that affected them in some way. It's concluded that those who kept the daily gratitude list were more optimistic, had fewer health problems, cardiovascular and sugar and blood, all these issues, physical health, mental health, spiritual health, everything measured better when you have an attitude of gratitude, when you pause to reflect, to appreciate, when you have the humility to realize, I can't go at it alone and I'm not alone in this world. It's an amazing story about Charles Plum. Anyone ever hear that name? A U.S. Naval Academy graduate. He was a jet fighter pilot in Vietnam in 1960. What year was it? After 75 combat missions, his plane was destroyed by a surface-to-air missile. And he ejected from the plane and he parachuted to safety, but he was captured by the enemies and he spent 6 years in a communist prison. He survived that ordeal. It's hard to imagine how you come back from it. But many years later, he was sitting in a restaurant with his wife. And a man from another cable came and he ran up to him and he said, "You're Plum! You flew fighter jets in Vietnam! And you were shot down!" And this older man at this point, was sitting enjoying a meal with his wife, turns to the man and says, "I am, but how in the world did you know that? How do you know who I am?" And the man said to him, "Because I'm the one who packed your parachute. I'm the one who packed the parachute that you used to jump out of the plane." And that night, Plum describes that he couldn't sleep. All he kept doing was thinking about that man. And he kept wondering what this man might have looked like in a sailor uniform. How many times did he pass him in the ship and never acknowledge him and never thank him and never show appreciation to him for the diligence and care that he took in folding and packing that parachute that one day he might need? Plum was a fighter pilot. He was respected and he was great and revered, and this man was an ordinary, lowly sailor. He couldn't even do more than fold and pack a parachute. and it continued to grin on his conscience, and he thought of the many lonely hours the sailor had spent on the long wooden table at the bowels of the ship, carefully weaving the fabric together and making sure the parachute was just right, and going to great lengths to make sure it was precise as it needed to be, knowing that someone's life depended on it. And only years later did Plum have a full appreciation of what this anonymous man did. And that's why now Plum goes around the world as a motivational speaker and wrote a book called Who Packed Your Parachute? And the message I want to leave you with tonight is to use Thanksgiving, not in a couple weeks from now, but to use the attitude of gratitude every day, the Moda Ani way we wake up with, the fulfilling our mission as Yehudim, as Jews who are grateful, to every day ask, who packed my parachute? What am I enjoying and how am I benefiting today by people who I never expressed the proper gratitude to? My first grade teacher who taught me to read and write, and I never said thank you. Is there a person who lent me money or a person who mentored me in my first job? Or is there a person who set me up with my spouse? And now it's all these years later and I forgot about them. You know, I know somebody who set up a couple 25 years ago, and he told me that on that couple's anniversary every year they send him a gift. Every year. He didn't just get a gift for first setting them up and helping them make that match. Every year on their anniversary, you know how they mark their anniversary? By remembering who packed their parachute. By sending a gift to their matchmaker who brought them together and gave them that happiness. You know why? Because they're like, Leah, what do you mean? Like, we bought you something and we made a toast to you at the wedding. We gave you a gift. Good, we're done. We paid off our debt. We're even. No, if you have an attitude of gratitude, you're never done. The name Yehuda over and over and over again. I know somebody who received scholarships in the schools he attended growing up, from elementary school all the way through graduate school. And finally, at an advanced age, when he finally became financially successful, you know what the first thing he did with that money? He didn't buy a bigger house or a nicer car, certainly didn't get a plane or a yacht. The first thing he did with his newfound financial freedom is he wrote a check to each of the schools who had given him scholarships. I wonder what the statistics are of schools that gave out scholarship who get a gift, forget equal to or more than, but even something from those who benefit from the scholarship later in life when they have the capacity to make a gift, to pay back, to remember who packed their parachute. How many of us in our lives benefited from the generosity of others, and have we maintained that attitude of gratitude? Do we remember who packed our parachute, who gave us those chances and those opportunities? And that's what Thanksgiving is all about. It's asking ourselves, who contributed to the lives? Our kindergarten teacher. Imagine your kindergarten teacher, if they're still alive. If they got a note from you now, you tracked them down and said, I want to thank you. Did someone teach you to swim or play the piano or taught you how to drive? Imagine your high school principal, your childhood pediatrician. Imagine your housekeeper growing up who cleaned your room and picked up your dirty laundry from the floor and maintained your secrets. Imagine if they got a note from you now saying, you know, I never adequately thanked you for everything you did in those early years of my life. Did we thank the teacher who was patient with us? Did we thank the orthodontist who gave us straight teeth? Do we thank the people who packed our parachute? Do we express that appreciation? It's easy to fall into that trap of entitlement, of thinking it's coming to us. Why do I have to thank my children's teachers? That's their job. Do you know, I went to parent-teacher conferences this week. I'll end with this. I don't go to parent-teacher conferences. I just told you how many kids I have, and if you add up all the years of schooling, it's like a lifetime. And I don't go to parent-teacher conferences, but my wife was out of town, and I had no choice. I was not given a choice. I went to parent-teacher conferences. I don't go. But there was a great man who lived in our community who passed away this year at 47 years old, tragically. Really one of, if not the most extraordinary person I ever met. His name was Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit. He was a noted cardiologist. He was also a rabbi. He was an amazing father, friend. He was just the most incredible person you ever met. Positive spirit. Every time you were in his presence, you were uplifted. You were just a light came into the room. So almost every year we'd have the following interactions. At parent-teacher conference week, and he'd say to me, am I going to see you tonight at parent-teacher conference? And I'd say, I don't do parent-teacher conferences. And he'd say to me, not yet, it's annoying, you got to do it, or yeah, it's important, my wife makes me go, or yeah, the children, we care about the children, so we got to figure out and find out what's going on with them. Every year he'd say to me, because shock, I don't understand. You don't want to go and say thank you to the teachers who are giving their lives to raise your children, to teach your children? And I'd still say, no, you do it for me, I'm good. But I thought of him this year as he passed away, and I found myself at parent-teacher conferences. And at the end of each conference, which there were many, after hearing about my children, I said, I want to tell you why I'm here tonight. I want to thank you for everything you've done to dedicate your life to teaching and the impact that you're having on my church. Don't our teachers deserve to hear that? Yeah. And so, Thanksgiving is not one day on the calendar. Thanksgiving is every single day. Wake up with that attitude of gratitude, and Tony Robbins is right. Humility and the health in every way that you will find, you'll become the richest people on the planet. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.